The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So a few things. One is about COVID. So we have to all be masked for now. You know, this is a moving event. So it might be that that changes over the course of the program. And which direction it changes, we don't know. But probably it'll get better. And now I feel more comfortable at some point taking the masks off, but we'll see. We're following the protocol here at IMC. I think we're required to do that. We're kind of guests of the IMC. And there's a number of things that protect us. One is hopefully all of you are vaccinated. Second is that wearing these masks, N95 masks, are quite protective. We have a lot of air purification going on. In this room here, there are four air purifiers on. There's two of them in the outer hall. And also we have, I don't know if it's on, but it's supposed to be on. Is the fan on? Yeah, okay. And so the fan is bringing fresh air into the room. So we're getting outside air coming in. And we could also, at some point, if it's warm enough, we can open the doors and, you know, do that too. Or if we have a break, we can open that door and that door just kind of air out the place even more. So I think those, you know, the combination of all those things, I think we're well protected. When we go outside, we can take the masks off if you'd like. It's, you know, and so what I noticed last year when we started, we did the same thing and masks off outside. Maybe things were different a year ago. But I was kind of a little bit, wow, they're standing close together. and so, I don't know, you know, whatever your comfort, it's up to you. You know, it's you're responsible for your own thing once you're outside. And we can eat lunch outside. That's pretty standard for our program. We put up chairs and tables outside, and it's a kind of very nice place to sit and have lunch and chat. I think most of you haven't been here, I think, before, but a few of you have. I think Sage has been here, Conrad has been here, Kristen has been here, Alan has been here. Anybody else? Sharon has been here, yes? So, I'm pointing them out just because of those of you who've never been here before. There's a few you can ask in addition to me if, I don't know what you'd ask, but about how it works here. And then Jennifer will be late. She had surgery for her foot recently, and so she just had the cast go off a few days ago. And she's can't put weight still on her foot, so things take longer for her to come down from where she is in Santa Rosa. But she'll be here. But when she comes, she'll probably come on some kind of scooter or something, some kind of device. That probably the two of you sitting there, if you could just kind of make more room for her, and so she can. Easy to come in. And so those are the logistics. So any logistical things that would help you feel more comfortable here? Yes?
I'm sure we have a break schedule. Could I know about that?
Yeah, we have a break schedule about mid-morning. The usual schedule is have a session, a break, and then a session and a lunch. And then the same thing in the afternoon. Sometimes in the afternoon we have two breaks, because in the afternoon, one of the breaks, the last break, whenever that is, we are also responsible for cleaning the place up and turning it back into what it was before. And it usually happens somewhat informally. Different people take turns doing it at different times without any particular request or way. But we have to clean the bathrooms, we tidy it up. The kitchen and trash should be taken out, the kitchen tidied up. Sometimes we vacuum the carpet here. So it's not a big thing, but I'll talk more about that at the end of the day. So any other thing that you can think of? Logistical-wise, the program ideas will come soon. Okay, well, welcome I almost said I wouldn't do it. But what I can do is I can welcome you wholeheartedly from IMC. I also represent IMC here, so IMC welcomes you, and IMC is very happy that this program happens here and delighted that you've come here to be part of it. Well, the last thing to say is that we ask you only bring water in here, no food and no other drinks.
Okay. So here's the formal welcome. Welcome. you know, on the first day, we've been teaching this program together with Jennifer for many years. But each year, I often feel like this is the first day at school, you know, and you look around and you see all these people you don't know, and you sit in a big circle and feel like you're back at school. And in some ways, that's how it is. But as I drove down with Kay and I was saying, but then 6 months later, you know so much about each other and you feel some kind of trust and intimacy. And it's so interesting how that evolves and ripens. So in a moment, we'll go around and each of us will just say our name, our pronouns, where you're from, and maybe one or two words or a phrase about just how you're feeling right now. In fact, maybe we should just start with that. Okay, I'll start.
Yeah. Is the way these mics are designed, they're kind of, you hold them horizontally, they take the sound better than like this.
Was that loud enough? Yeah. Okay.
Let us know if you should turn it up.
Yeah.
So let's see. Is that getting is that louder now?
That's
is that good.
Yeah. Okay. Someone like to begin, and we'll go clockwise from there.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Conrad. I came in from San Mateo this morning, and I'm feeling elated to be here with everyone.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Alisa. I like they, them pronouns. I came from Oakland today, and I'm from Delaware originally, and I'm feeling interested.
Good morning. My name is Kay. I use she, her pronouns. I am currently living in San Francisco, but I'm from the Northeast, Connecticut, and I'm feeling really excited and like a little tense.
Hi, everyone. I'm Letisa. I use she, her pronouns. I'm coming in from Berkeley, IBS, but I'm from about an hour and a half north of Atlanta, Georgia, and I'm feeling relaxed.
Hi, I'm Sharon. She, her are my pronouns, and I drove up from Santa Cruz this morning, which meant I got here approximately an hour early because I wasn't sure about the traffic. And I'm happy to be here, bordering on a little overamped. So,
my name is Asia. I she, her pronouns. I grew up in Palo Alto, not too far from right here, but I'm currently living in Berkeley as well. And my nervous system is just dropping in because the driving's not my favorite activity. So I feel like I drove here, I was looking at the clock, am I going to make it? And so now I'm like, whew, you're here. You can chill.
My name is Casey. I'm originally from Singapore and Hong Kong. I currently live in Oakland. My pronouns are she and her. I'm feeling happy to be here and curious. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Clarence, he, him pronouns. I drove in from Alameda today, and I probably will be driving in from Alameda every time I come here. And I'm feeling excited and a little frenetic right now. Yeah.
Hi, I'm Sri, he, his pronoun. I was born and raised in India. I came here for my higher studies, master's program in engineering. I spent majority of my life in the Bay Area, so this is my home. And actually, I'm very excited. Like as Gil said, you know, like a kid going to school for the first day. That's how I'm excited today. I have an open mind. I'm looking forward to today. So thank you.
Hi, everyone. My name is Kristen. I use she, her pronouns. I drove in from Pacifica today, so not too far. I grew up in Hong Kong, Malaysia, Indonesia, and I'm feeling inquisitive. I think I'm very curious about everybody.
Hi, everyone. My name is Barbara, and I use she, her pronouns. I live in Napa. I've been in the Bay Area for a really long time, but I'm originally from back east. And I'm excited and a little nervous.
Name's Alan, he, him. Originally from Indiana, but I've been living here in the Bay Area for quite a while now, but recent transfer to Emerald Hill next door, and I'm very excited about starting this and meeting everyone and learning more.
Good morning. Alan, he, him. I live in West Marin. I've lived in Marin County most of the last 40 years. Curious, aroused, edgy, and open.
So I'm Gil, and I've lived here in Redwood City for 20 years, moved here after IMC acquired this building here. And I think 19 of those years we've been doing this chaplaincy program. So this is actually the 20th time we're doing it. And so I'm very delighted to be here. I love this program. I love the people who come, and getting to know you all is going to be something I look forward to.
Okay. I'm Paul, he, him. I grew up in Ireland. I practice at the San Francisco Zen Center, and I live across the street from the San Francisco Zen Center. And I am charmed to be here this morning.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Sage. I use she, her pronouns. I drove over from Stanford this morning, and I would say I am over-caffeinated, but joyful.
Okay. Is Jennifer arriving? Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, she's arriving. Let me give you a brief outline of the schedule for today, and then we'll do a sitting. Okay. So, welcome, meditation, some words from Gil and myself on the Buddhist spiritual care program and practice, and then a discussion we'll have as a large group. Then we'll take a break, and then Jennifer will talk about the history of chaplaincy and how set a context for this program, in particular the didactic aspect of the skill-building aspect of the program. And then Gil will give a presentation on the spiritual formation You know, how our practice is an integral part of the program and how we will cultivate that together. And then we'll have lunch. And as Gil said, we could do that outdoors if we wish. And then in the afternoon, we'll outline the different components of the program. You know, there's a variety of things that will be helpful to know. And it might feel like it's too much information all at once. And that's what you'll also it'll be on the website, and you'll also be introduced to it as we go along. You know? And then towards the end of the afternoon, then we'll do that. Then that'll finish with a break, and then we'll have what we're calling community formation. I think you all know to bring a shoebox with some mementos and show and tells. And the notion is that it's a kind of a fun thing to do. It's a way to just let other people know. We'll do it in small groups, and each of us will have an opportunity to, you know, demonstrate some of the details of who we are and how we got here. So that's the day. And here comes Jennifer. Jennifer, do you want it that high, or would you like a lower pedestal to put your foot on? It's okay. We just all introduced ourselves, and I wondered if you would like to introduce yourself.
My name is Jennifer Block. I've met all of you virtually. It's nice to be with you in person for a moment. I look forward to our time together. I broke my ankle and had surgery, and I'm 4 weeks from surgery, so I'm hoping by the next time I see you, I'll be walking, but we'll see. That's all I got for now.
Okay. So we'll have a sitting now, and we will, each time we come together, after a brief welcome, we'll sit for about 15 minutes. So if you can just make yourself comfortable. And if you want to get a safu or a cushion to sit on the floor, you can do that. So just to let yourself be, just notice how it is to be here, what it's evoking, and feel into the mental disposition, the physical disposition, and any emotions that are coming up. And as you do that, just to let yourself breathe. Let yourself feel the inhale, taking it in. And let yourself feel the exhale. Just releasing into being here. you.
So Jennifer just told me that there's one more person who was accepted to the program who is maybe coming, starting this afternoon. So you might see one more person. And so expand your heart just one more person wide. So be ready for that. So I'm delighted, as I said, about starting this program. It's been one of the bright lights of my life to do this program, and I sometimes think of it as a pyramid scheme for joy. You all go out and do some wonderful things in the world, supporting others, and that brings me joy. And sometimes it ripples out to from them to others as well. And it was a surprise to me, I would say, that Buddhist practice would lead to the desire to meet and address and serve the suffering of this world. I started with a Zen practice, and I don't think that compassion was an active part of my vocabulary when I started. And I didn't know much about Buddhism and Zen when I started, but I suppose I was more in the enlightenment camp. And what happened over the first years of practice at San Francisco Zen Center was, I don't think I was any enlightened in any particular way that I would have thought. But to my surprise, I was compassionate. And that was the big transformation from that practice there. And that compassionment that came along kind of grew and developed until, looking back, I saw what had happened. I associate also with, as doing the practice, that in the kind of the Zen language of the times, that it was opening up to a particular way of experiencing emptiness, where the boundaries between self and other began to dissolve. And it kind of the others became much more intimately connected to me than I'd ever had before in my life that I knew that was possible. And the closest thing I had to what I was starting to feel was sometimes being out in nature and feeling kind of like my boundaries of who I was dissolve, and just felt like I was deeply connected to the natural environment. And so at some point it became clear to me that the suffering of others was as much of my interest as my own suffering. I couldn't differentiate, you know, why differentiate between my own suffering and other suffering when I could feel both somehow or be connected to both. And so in Zen practice I was compassionate. When I did Vipassana practice, I discovered something arose again without me wanting it. In fact, if anything, if I knew about it, I would have not wanted it, because it was too artificial, too saccharine, too sweet, too something. But what arose in Vipassana practice was metta, that was loving kindness. And that surprised me, and that created a very different context for being in the world with other people, and kind of a whole other way of connecting, I felt, that wasn't based on suffering, but based on somehow the beauty and the wonderfulness of meeting people and kind of being aware of that. And so then I continued to practice, and this wonderful thing that the practice that I was doing, it seemed like it was completely, somehow, looking back, integrated with not just developing myself, but developing a certain kind of connectivity to the world around me in an increasingly rich variety of ways that I hadn't known before. And so it started to feel just kind of second nature to respond to the suffering of the world in a way that didn't feel like, you know, that I was doing it or I was intentionally doing it or I was going to, I sat down and and worked out the philosophy of why you should work, why you should care for other people too. And so I had it all laid out, exactly the rationale for it. And then with that equation, those equations, I would go and then try to figure out how to help people. It wasn't like that. It was just kind of surprise. It was just kind of this evolution of this opening of the heart or something, opening of emptiness, opening of letting go of the barriers, the clinging that got in the way. And it just seemed like the most natural thing. And then as the practice continued, I discovered a third thing that also evolved that seemed to be very connected to a sense of freedom, even more so than compassion and metta. And that was a basic human capacity to care for others. And caring, for, in my vocabulary, is different than compassion and metta. And rather than being based on love or compassion, if anything, it's based on a deep respect and a reverence for others and a willingness to just kind of serve even the people I don't love. There's the respect and reverence that, it doesn't even require compassion. It's just kind of part of that respect to care. And in the course of that, increasingly living my life as a life of responding to suffering, that was what I dedicated my life to when I became ordained as a Zen priest. That commitment to be ordained was not about continuing my own practice. It was, of course, but it was really that I wanted to respond to the suffering of the world in what I thought was the appropriate, best way that I knew how to do it. And that's been my life, ever since. And then we had, 2001, we had 9/11, and that had a big impact on me. And I was now suffering at a scale that I had, never really had to contend with before. And I felt it was important to be changed by that event. I felt like if I wasn't changed by it, if I just kind of was upset by it, horrified, grieved by this major event, and then after a few months went back to things as usual, that would be a horrible thing, that somehow that didn't seem right to me. So I was thinking, well, what to do? And the what to do was to start this chaplaincy program, to support people to go out and encounter suffering in the world, in sometimes some of the most difficult circumstances that humans can encounter. That chaplains are potentially, it depends, so many different places people do chaplaincy work, do spiritual care work, but it would be nice to believe that people who do some chaplaincy training have some preparation to in knowing how to be present for others, no matter how horrendous, how difficult the suffering is, that we don't close down with suffering, we don't turn away from suffering, we don't get confused by it, by the suffering, and we are willing to stand there. We don't have to know what to do exactly, but we're willing to have the ability to stand there with our presence, our attention, our care, our love, our compassion, available, ready. And maybe sometimes that's all that's needed. People who feel that they're being accompanied and someone knows them and it's present for them in this kind of way that you would be maybe with yourself on a meditation retreat. We're just fully there for it all. And then maybe there's some action. Maybe you either speak to them. Maybe you... All kinds of things you can do in chaplaincy. That's what we'll be exploring here for this program. And I'm introducing it this way because I want to really try to connect what we're doing here to Buddhist practice, to hopefully the practice that you've been doing and are doing, and that you will reflect on what the connection is of the spiritual care work that we're studying here with your practice. and the connection of practice to that your involvement, your connection to others, to the suffering of the world, to the joys of the world. Chaplains are also know how to be present for the joys and celebrate that with people as part of their, you know, what they do. And so so hopefully you'll reflect on that as we go along. And one of the ways that we support that is that we base the year on what's called the, in Pali, the Theravadan language, the 10 paramis. In Sanskrit, it's the 10 paramitas. Both traditions have a list of 10. They're slightly different list. And we're using the Pali list, the Theravadan list. But they both are function for the same purpose. These are the qualities that are needed to become a Buddha. Or how I like to say it, these are the qualities that are needed in order to be available to encounter and support the suffering world that we have. These qualities are the qualities that come out of and support in return liberation and compassion. So as an expression of liberation, expression of compassion, we have these 10. And as a support for compassion and liberation, we have these 10. And so these 10 we'll go through starting next month. And each month will be kind of a little bit organized and on the 10. And then we will, so you'll have a chance to read about it, think about it, reflect on it, and think about these qualities, these very, very beautiful qualities, about how this interacts, what this speaks to or speaks about or points to the interaction between your practice and caring for the world. And the 10 paramis are also a very nice journey. They build on each other as we do them, and we hope that as you do it, if you really engage in these as well, you'll get a sense of how they build on each other until we get to the end. So they start with generosity, and starting in October, and generosity is a wonderful quality in many, many ways. One of the interesting things about generosity, sometimes considered to be the beginning of the Buddhist path, but many of the words for the letting go that happen at the end of the Buddhist path are synonymous with words for generosity and giving. And the fact that somehow these words, like relinquishment that we say in English usually, also means a gift in Pali, it means both. So kind of the practice begins and ends with generosity. Generosity puts our practice in relationship to other people, which is important for chaplains, right? Usually we can be generous to ourselves, I suppose, but generosity is usually something done in relationship to others. And all the issues that come up around being generous and looking at it and understanding ourselves and the limitations to our generosity and the potential, what is expressed in generosity, begins creating healthy relationships through which we can then do chaplaincy. And with that relatedness to others, then it makes more sense to have a reference point of not harming others. And that's ethics. So the November we'll talk about ethics, which again is still relational in very, very important ways. But when it's based on the kind of goodness that comes from generosity and generous relationships, there's a very different relationship to ethics than rules. It's really kind of supporting something's developing. Then we go from there and talk about renunciation. I think with ethics and generosity together, there is this movement towards, in English we call it renunciation, letting go deeply. The sense in Pali, the word, is more like going out into... you're leaving things behind, but you're going out into the wide open space after being confined somehow. So you don't get that sense with the word renunciation in English. But as we understand generosity, understand ethics, we begin understanding the value of letting go of the force inside of us that would be not generous, that would be unethical. And so learning to let go of that. With letting go, we start to have a reference point for how good it feels to let go. And that becomes a reference point for wisdom, non-clinging, the benefits of non-clinging, non-grasping. And so in January, we talk about wisdom. Next parami. With wisdom, being wise, then there's wise effort. February, we'll talk about effort and how to engage in all this regard. But if you make effort, it's probably if next you need to develop patience. And so then we do patience. But if you have enough patience, then you begin encountering the truth. Patience is needed to really be present for what's really true, and to be patient with the truth is part of the task, what's really true. And then once you have a sense of the truth, then it can be wonderful, it makes sense to make a resolve to be true, to live by that truth. And so then the seventh parami is resolve. And then this marvelous thing that after all these things that we're doing is development and growth, and resolve, which can seem like, you know, like you're going to bear down or get tight, or like, okay, I'm going to get serious here. But I don't think it's that, because it's the foundation for the seventh, the eighth. So it's the foundation for the ninth, which is loving kindness. Isn't that nice? Maybe resolved on this, on metta, on kindness. And then finally, the crown jewel of Buddhist practice, that based on all this preceding it, is equanimity. And that will be what we'll do in the last day when we meet in July. That'll be the thing. So it helps to be equanimous about ending the program. But also because equanimity is one of the, I think, really centrally important qualities for effective spiritual care. If you don't have some kind of equanimity, if you have the opposite of equanimity, agitation, despair, resistance, spiritual care is probably not going to work so well. So that's kind of the orientation. And so hopefully you will, as I've said, you will be reflecting on how your own Buddhist practice, from your own Buddhist tradition, how that comes into play in this wonderful interconnectedness that we live in with others and the whole world. And that will be part of this exploration of our time together. So thank you.
And that leaves us with the question, so how exactly is each one of us and all of us collectively going to do that? You know, how are we going to navigate these exquisite teachings? How are we going to actualize them? You know, and this is what this program is about. In each year that we do it, you know, we think, the three of us think of ourselves as being in learning mode. We're teaching this program to learn how to teach this program, to learn deeper and deeper what it is we're trying to teach. Yeah. So often at the start of the year, I ask myself, well, what is it to be of service, you know? And how does that arise within me? Yeah. Like, was it... I grew up in a Catholic family, and is that it? Is that where it arose? And I think it has a variety of ingredients for us. I think it's innate in our nature. You know, as Gil was saying, you know, something in us cares. You know, we care about the people we love. And you know, our Buddhist practice is just saying, well, let that expand. You know, why would you leave anybody out of that? You know? And cultivating that sensibility. Like, it's not like, okay, this is something I don't have and that I'm going to make arise out of nothing. It's more like it's within us, you know. It's innate to our nature to care for others, to care for ourselves. And the expression of being of service. Like, in a way, this is given some significance in our lives, certain priority in our lives. And what this course is saying, and there's a heritage we can look at. You know, there's a Buddhist heritage, which Gil so wonderfully outlined, the paramis. And then there is a caring process. And we're calling that a chaplain, you know, someone who takes this on and says, I identify with this, you know, I identify with being of service, you know. And another wonderful Buddhist teaching is that of shunyata, you know, which Thich Nhat Hanh, I think, in a moment of genius. Actually, I heard him describe once, he was in front of an audience and he was trying to describe shunyata. And he tried on a few words on the audience. And the one that got the most positive response was interbeing. We interbe. You know? Our lives affect each other, you know? And I think that those human tendencies express this integral aspect of our nature, you know, that we interbe, we influence each other's. And then the craft of calling that forth has both a resonance and an expression and a guidance in basic Buddhist teachings. And then it also has an expression within what has arisen as the practice of chaplaincy. And that's the ambition of this course, and we hope, in a way, the actualizing of it is that how these two weave together, that each of us will discover for ourselves not just a closer connection to what brought you here, but also how to nurture that and how to express that, you know, in the context of Buddhist practice. And then within the craft of being a chaplain, you know. And that's what we'll weave together as we go through the year. And then there's a variety of things that we will mention today, the different components. As I was saying earlier, probably overload you with the details. You know, okay, you'll be writing these papers and you'll be writing this other kind of paper and you'll be having these readings and you'll meet with a buddy and then you'll meet with a small group and then you'll meet with the large group. So there will, all that will be presented. But for now, what I'd like to offer you is this notion that once a month, we will come on a chaplaincy retreat together, right here. We will sit in this circle. We will invite each other to open our hearts and nurture this aspiration to be of service. Yeah. That in the midst of all the other things that are going on for us internally and in the context of our life, that we'll retreat for one day a month and engage with this kind of nurturing. Yeah? In a way, each of us will support everyone else to do it. Yeah? The marvelous thing is when we practice together, often we don't know what kind of positive influence we're being on others. Yeah? From our subjective position, we're just being ourselves and trying to muddle through and figure out what's going on for us and what's being presented to us. But others see and are inspired by our sincerity, our dedication, how we work with what we experience as limitations. Yeah? To see someone being patient, yeah, is inspiring. It's instructive. It's supportive. Now, the person might just think, well, I'm just trying to handle my own agitation. Yeah? So this curious interplay, interbeing, yeah, that we will engage in. And it's certainly our hope that together we can cultivate a safe environment, an environment that we can trust together, an environment where we can take risks, huh? And that we can bring a kind of radical honesty to. Yeah. As we explore together. Like one of the things we say, you know, and we will do so some of this today, we invite diversity. We invite it as an enrichment and a teaching, you know? Now, but we also offer this aspiration, our aspiration, hopefully, that you will share. We offer it with a certain amount of humility because we feel like we have more to learn about that field. You know, that we're not coming as an authority, but we're coming as a fellow seeker. You know? And we would invite you to have a similar kind of attitude, you know, that you're here to learn. You know? And then so we come together once a month, and then within that monthly retreat, there's a kind of immersion, you know? Like the initiated through meditation. Each month we will start with a meditation. And then within that initiated togetherness, interbeing, we will delve into these topics, discovering how, in a way, they're asking us to explore and discover something about how we want ourselves to be. I think when we're selfish and angry and resentful, we sort of let ourselves down. You know? Like something in us is disappointed in how we're being. And I think when we call forth this nobility of spirit, something in us just simply says, Yes. Yes. This is the life I want to be. Yeah. So in that day of immersion, yeah, to try to return to that and then let that flow out of us into how we're engaging our chaplaincy. Yeah? And how will that take shape? In a way, it's kind of a mystery. Yeah? Like in a moment, I'm going to ask you to do an exercise, break into threes, and just share with the other people, well, how did I end up here? You know? And in some ways, it's just our best guess, you know, as to how we ended up here. Something within us, and maybe if you try to answer it, you know, you touch on that, you know. Who and how, who inspired you? You know, in Buddhism, and particularly in Zen Buddhism, but in many forms of Buddhism, there's a sense of lineage or heritage, you know, from our ancestors. Like our ancestors, through their example, inspired us to be people of service. Yeah? And how did that happen? How do we evoke it? How do we acknowledge it and let it register, take it to heart? There's a certain kind of alchemy that happens for us in that exploration. Yeah. And so we explore it not to figure it out, but more to feel into it, you know, to be touched by it, as I just said, to take it to heart. So that's now. Well, I'd like you to explore. You know, how did you end up here? Yeah. Maybe you can look at your place of origin or the people who brought you to life or you've lived with, how they influenced you, how they inspired you. And then how something within yourself has come to request expression. Huh? And anything else. And then one last detail is that in our time together, we are each other's chaplain. You know? Right away, we learn about deep listening. Right away, we learn about, in a way, like listening with our heart rather than our head. Nobody really feels heard when we turn them into, oh, you're one of them, you know? And here's my notions about one of them, and I'm just going to apply them to you, you know? Each of us wants to be seen and heard as something noble, you know? Something worthy of reverence. Yeah. And so our deep listening offers that. Yeah. And even though we might not be saying anything, if we're relating to someone with that intention and that attitude, something in them is coming alive. In a way, so even in this very first interaction, you know, if you can encourage yourself, guide yourself to listen and participate in that way. And then one last thing. You can't go wrong. Okay. So we'll break up into threes, and then we'll have about 20 minutes. So you can explore your own ideas, get some feedback, listen to others, and then we'll come back into a circle and we'll just share how the exercise was. So there's 14. So let's do threes and a two. Okay? So that will be four threes and then a two. Okay? So three, 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 and two. Okay? And you can use this space and you can use that space if you want to be out there so there's less noise in this room.
You could also go outside and take off your mask, but don't go very far away.
Yeah.
We'll ring a bell to bring you back. How long is it, Paul?
It's about 20 minutes. We're going to end at 10:45. Yeah. I'll ring a bell about 3 minutes before you're going to end. And just to come back into a large circle for a moment, and then just a few words how that group discussion was for you. Anything you'd like to say about it? And if you would take a mic, it helps us to record it.
I found it very settling and connecting to just start really meeting and listening to other participants and hearing about their lives.
Great.
I thought it was very joyful and fun, and I appreciated getting to know everyone and seeing their whole face.
Yes, I had a very good time talking with another Alan here, and I think it's so. I think it was both enlightening and very, very encouraging to have this connection, to be able to talk honestly about my experience and hear about his experience and how they kind of differ, but how they kind of led to the same place.
Yeah, in a brief period of time, we were able to have some very authentic exchange, get to know my peers, a couple of them. It was good discussion. So what brought us here was different paths, but all of have similar kind of intentions. So it's beautiful. Thank you.
I felt very lucky to be hanging around with, like, the best listeners in a very selected group. Thank you so much.
Now you have it, you might as well say
something. I know, I guess, you know. That wasn't my experience at all. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, I'm still feeling it physically in my heart because I feel that we really connected, and it was very meaningful to me. And I agree, we came, you know, with a different path, but felt really like we were honest and authentic with each other, and we have similar intentions and reasons to be here. Thank you.
Anyone else before we take a break? So this is a technique we will use quite a bit, you know. I don't know if you've heard this outline before. Like, talk about it, do it, and then talk about what you did. Here's what we're going to do. Here's, now we're doing it, and how was it to do it? And then it's interesting when it's more amorphous, you know, it's not like, okay, here's a task, you know. It's more like, find your relationship to what was presented and notice and share what it evokes for you. And then let that sort of sink in. Yeah. And somehow speaking it out loud helps that process. Okay, so we will take a break now for 15 minutes. And there's a tea there in the drawers. If you're not familiar with the place, you can just open the drawers and explore. And there's water too. Okay. So we'll ring a bell in about a couple of minutes before we start again. Okay. Thank you.
And if the paper cups are for tea are not on the counter, they're in the cabinet.